Arcane presents an audio presentation of Yell Fire by Jeremy Shelton, narrated by Nathan Shelton. Find more on Irreverent Nation at jshelton.net.
Yell Fire by Jeremy Shelton. Part 2, Diagnostics. Carl immediately ducked down when he saw the car slide by. He knew it was not the one, but it still demanded his rapt attention. His normally cloudy brown eyes were sharp and somehow brighter as they followed the vehicle's progress down the road as it turned onto Pine Boulevard. Presently, the car was gone, and he released his captive breath. He had been crouching behind the fallen pillar for a few minutes, give or take. Felt like hours, of course. He could hear the blood throbbing and pulsing its way from his heart to his brain and then back again. It seemed way too loud, all-encompassing, deafening. It was not doing wonders for his anxiety.
"Too long, man. Get moving."
He tried to stand up, but instead fell back down into a crouch and lost control of his breathing. Short, quick bursts were the only way his lungs could function, apparently. And then he just lost it. A sneeze burst from his nose and mouth in a rather vicious manner, expelling fluid everywhere. He became vaguely aware that the noises he was making would certainly attract interest, and he opened his eyes again, and he was doing it wrong.
"Cut!"
came the call. Carl's eyes closed and he bowed his head, preparing for notes. Despare loved giving notes. He waited. After a minute, Carl looked up to observe what the holdup was. He saw that Despare was still a little ways off, wearing his "good job, almost had it" face. He could also tell that Despare was trying not to look as if the walk was bothering him. A stifled wince on every other downbeat was his tell. Everyone had a tell, Carl believed. He thought the universe always had a way to make hidden intentions made known. It was this belief that shaped his approach to life and to his craft, which, up till now, did not include acting. I mean, how could you get more dishonest than acting?
"Carl,"
smiled Despare, holding out his hands. Carl knew what he was going to say and mouthed it in his head.
"Wonderful, wonderful performance, but..."
Despare, a man as used to reading cues as giving them, abruptly shut his mouth. He straightened and began again.
"Carl, have you considered the implications of what we're doing?"
Carl blinked. He knew this part by heart, too.
"It is the homage to the very first media sensation of the 20th century, yes, but it is also so, so much more. It is..."
He trailed off.
"Good God, man, are you bleeding?"
Carl wiped his nose and found that he was.
"Oh, shit, I get allergies bad as hell this time of year.
His speech was suddenly cut off by a violent sneeze plucked from the ether and placed in his mouth, interrupting his discourse.
"Achoo!"
he said.
"Oh, Carl, get out of here, man,"
Despare said.
"You've got to go by wardrobe now. You've got blood all over the front of you, man."
Carl looked down and received visual confirmation of his director's lamentation. He indeed had blood on his shirt.
Said Carl.
He wiped his nose and walked away. Patrick Despare turned to his crew and raised his hands.
"All right, people, everyone, your attention, please," he bellowed.
The crew turned their attention to him, at least partially.
"All done for now. Meet back in 20, he said and lowered his hands.
"Why does he always shout like that?"
said the gaffer to the sound engineer.
"Bro, I know," the engineer shook his head. "It's all caps 24/7 with this guy.
I mean, there's five of us. He addresses the whole county every time he wants to talk to us."
He laughed and pulled at his cigarette.
"That's Pat, though, man. Always looking to affect everyone," said the engineer. "He will, too, one day."
As they walked away, Despare looked on toward the horizon. After a moment, he smiled. Dwayne had it. That is all there was to it. No more excuses, ifs and buts be damned. He was going to tell Roger that he was going to the police. He wiped his nose again and rubbed his hands on his pants. He was going to march outside and tell Roger that this looting shit was over and that he heard a sound. Dwayne stopped and stood still as his blood froze him in place.
He tried to control his breathing, but his breathing thought otherwise. Duane tried to roll his eyes back to the source of the sound and investigate peripherally. As he strained, a big drop of sweat made its way into his left eye. He blinked it out and thought he heard the noise again. His breath caught. It was on the far side of the hall, not from the living area where they had gotten rid of the dead ones. They had looked in there, but hadn't found anything. Could these things hide? That didn't seem to add up too much in his
Creak.
That was an extremely persuasive sound, and it gave Duane the urge to flee. Duane obliged this impulse, and he was out through the sliding glass doors into the sunshine. He had to find Roger, tell him he was done, get the hell away from any and all creatures. Let's see what it's like at the edge of town. All of these thoughts fell out of his head as he ran straight into Roger and was knocked on his ass.
Oof,
he said. Get up, said Roger. He started to do just that, but a thought occurred to him as he tried to get up and made him pause.
Roger?
I said get up. What have you got that for? Asked Duane. He was referring to the shovel his partner had in his hands.
I reckon I'm going to kill you with it, said Roger.
Duane smiled, uneasily, but still pleasant in recognition. Sling blade. Nice. But man, we gotta get gone. There is something else in there, he began.
Jesus Christ, said Roger. He was looking down at Duane with pity and disgust. Just look at yourself, Duane.
Duane did, for the first time in a while, perhaps all day, and gasped. The front of his shirt was smeary with blood, especially where he had been rubbing his hands. Holy shit. As he realized the implications, his hand shot to his nose and began to feel around.
No, 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 Roger sighed.
That's right, Dee. I'm sorry, but you gotta go. Duane's eyes widened as Roger lifted the shovel. When the sound began, he thought it was a mystical pre-death noise that everyone must hear in these situations. A little bit of mysticism to even out a life of confusion. It sounded an awful lot like a motor. And that would make sense, as he had been a car nut his whole life. Maybe when you died, the last thing you heard or saw was something you love. In that sense, Duane was right. The Ford F-150 came crashing through the back gate and smashed Duane underneath its grill. As he died, he didn't quite know what had killed him. The symbol of something he had always loved, or his best friend with a shovel. The sound was everywhere, all around her, possibly emanating from inside her, for all she knew. It was high and shrill like the hiss of a kettle past due, except this kettle hadn't decided if it was ready to pour or not. It seemed it wanted and wanted her to stay right where she was. She certainly could not figure out how to make any change to her current situation. Eventually, she realized her eyes were open. A world was trying to etch itself upon her field of vision. It was a canvas of gray with white flakes floating and traveling in slow motion to nowhere in particular. It seemed to scream traction. She tried to swallow and realized she couldn't. She choked and sat up. The dizziness that accumulated as she sat up from her head back position made her instantly nauseous. She almost vomited as she ran into the airbag. It must have deployed during the crash.
Oh!
That brought the world back. She knew where she was. She was in her truck, and she had been in an accident. She suddenly jerked her head left to right in a grand spasmodic gesture. Her desire to see everything in panorama was intense and surface felt. Adrenaline had erased any discombobulation she was feeling. She knew one thing, and one thing only. Fear. She said. She sucked in air and thrashed about. She began, and then the tears came. Her face turned in on itself as she let the wave of grief overcome her. She sobbed, she shook, she sneezed. She was almost in time to catch the last action with her hand, but not quite. Her expectoration hit the steering wheel with a splat. She opened her eyes and saw red. Her eyes widened and both of her hands went to her mouth. It was true then. She had it. With her hands still over mouth, she squeezed her eyes shut, let out a breath, and opened them again. Her reality had not changed. She was fucked. She knew there was no coming back from this. Everybody knew that. Nothing left to do but lay down and be undead. She started to cry again, then hit herself in the face. she repeated this exercise 3 times. Whap! 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 She breathed, she pursed her lips, she narrowed her eyes. Okay, okay, so it is over. It is over. What do I do now? With some effort, she pulled and pushed the airbag down so that she could see what she had plowed into. She cautiously looked out the windshield at the man lying on the hood. He was face down, thankfully. The blood leaving his body had started to pool out and around him. She could see some still dripping out from one of the curls on his hair. She winced as her stomach turned over. She thought she would be sick again, but she did not turn away from the sight of the corpse. As she stared, the sensation in her stomach changed to something she knew but couldn't quite place. All that blood, she thought. That's all that is left of us. Her stomach growled. She did indeed know this feeling. She was hungry. The truck door came open a lot easier than she expected, so much so that it took her by surprise and she stumbled out onto the ground. Although she landed on her face almost entirely, there was little pain. Of course not, dummy. You were dead. She still could feel her heart beating, though, and could taste her ragged breath reaching out for substance. How weird to have the contradiction be so physical. She felt as if she was wearing a Halloween mask of sanity on top of her very real state of batshit crazy. Her head ached with every beat of her heart. God, this hurts. I've got to eat something. She knew what she was supposed to eat, but she didn't think she could bring herself to do it. Her eyes turned back to the body lying on the truck. She staggered over to it. She had begun to salivate. She knew she shouldn't do this, that it was inherently wrong because she was told it was wrong her whole life. Although, hadn't she read something or seen a movie about how eating human flesh would transfer that person's energy to you? She couldn't remember. She had been having quite a terrible day. She reached out over to the dead man and grabbed his arm. She looked on toward the horizon as she put his hand in her mouth. Then a bullet blew her mind out the back of her head and she fell backwards into the dirt. She no longer worried about her appetite. The barrel bucked in her hand and caused her to stumble a little in the dirt. Shit! That was loud! She ducked back into the house, a little left of the door where she had been standing. She stood there breathing, waiting for her pulse to come back into a normal range. She had hit the thing right in the head. That was the positive thing. The problem now was the aftermath. Was the shot going to draw more of them to the house? Anne did not know, and she didn't have much time to say one way or the other. She barely had the breath in the room to keep awake. She could not breathe right. She had been hiding in the second bathroom all morning. She'd come in late, or extremely early, rather. She had seen Sam asleep on the couch, and as weird as that was, she proceeded to the bathroom because she had to go. She had just finished up when she heard the doorbell, gunshot, and subsequent horror unfold. She had been an unwilling auditory witness to the entire morning's proceedings. She had been biding her time until she could go to her room and grab her gun. Once the hillbilly raiders left, she would be able to. As soon as she had heard them go to the backyard, she risked opening the door. Of course, it creaked and cracked ridiculously. She hid a little longer then, waiting to hear if any other noise would happen. And still, she had come out to this. As her breath finally came back to normal, she began considering her next move. To her, the most logical move would be to figure out a way to communicate with someone on the outside. Her phone had given some clues before everything went out. Headlines were scrambled and fighting over one another for control of the stream. Terrorist strike imminent for small town. It came from space to turn us around. BBC.gov had said, hay fever ramps up with troubling symptoms as terror of widespread communicability mounts. The infection may cause ravenous. Just then, he pounced on her. Ah! She screamed and raised the gun. No, 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 don't shoot! Roger screamed and raised his hands to show that he was not armed. Why not? She asked back. I saw what you did to my friends. Tried to do to your friend. And I saw what you did to that lady just now. You're a hell of a shot. Get the fuck back, she screamed and advanced toward him, gun drawn. Easy, easy, he said. Hands still raised, he backed up a few steps and spoke softly. I think we can help each other, he continued. She eyed him and considered, never taking the gun off of him. She then used one hand to reach into her pocket. She brought it back out and produced a white polycloth that she kept for cleaning her glasses. She tossed it to him, using the same hand. Blow your nose into this, she said. Roger caught the cloth with one hand and kept the other in the air. He kept his eyes on her while bringing the cloth to his nose.
He blew. "Now unfold it," she said. "Okay, okay. Can I put my other hand down?"
"Slowly," she said. He brought his other hand down and used it to unfurl the cloth. He let his eyes drop down to the contents and let out his breath.
"Show it to me," she said.
He looked at her and nodded. He turned the tissue around to show her what he had blown from his nose. It was wet with snot, and there were a few pieces of random detritus in there.
Thank God, she said, and brought the gun down.
"Where do we go from here?"
"Let's try getting out," he said. As if on cue, a wail came from behind them. A more perfect catalyst to move would be hard to find.
Yeah!
They looked at each other, each seeing the terror burgeoning on each other's face.
"What?"
he breathed.
"Let's go,"
she said.
They ran.
Thank you.